96. Pieces of a Fabriel. Yelignar is said to consume souls, but I can't find a specific explanation. I'm uncertain this lore is correct. From Hesse's Mythica, page 51. On the day of the first meeting of monarchs at Urethiru, Navani made each person, no matter how important, carry their own chair. The old Alethi tradition symbolized each chief bringing important wisdom to a gathering. Navani and Dalinar arrived first, stepping off the lift and walking toward the meeting room near the top of Urethiru. Her chair was sensible but comfortable, made of soul-cast wood with a padded seat. Dalinar had tried to bring a stool, but she'd insisted that he do better. This wasn't a battlefield strategy tent, and forced austerity wouldn't impress the monarchs. He'd eventually selected a sturdy wooden chair of thick stump weight, with wide armrests, but no padding. He'd quietly spent the trip up watching floors pass. When Dalinar was troubled, he went silent. His brow would scrunch up in thought, and to everyone else, it looked like he was scowling. "They got out, Dalinar," Navani said to him. "I'm sure they did. Elokar and Adolin are safe, somewhere." He nodded. But even if they had survived, Kolinar had fallen. Was that why he seemed so haunted? No, it was something else. Ever since he'd collapsed after visiting Aesir, it seemed that something in Dalinar had snapped. This morning he had quietly asked her to lead the meeting. She worried deeply for what was happening to him, and for Elokar, and for Kolinar. But storms, they had worked so hard to forge this coalition, she would not let it collapse now. She'd already grieved for a daughter, but then that daughter had returned to her. She had to hope the same for Elokar, at the very least, so she could keep functioning while Dalinar mourned. They settled their chairs in the large meeting room, which had a clear view out flat glass windows overlooking mountains. Servants had already set out refreshment along the curved sidewall of the half-circle room. The tiled floor was inlaid with the image of the double eye of the Almighty, complete with surges and essences. Bridge 4 piled into the room after them. Many had brought simple seats, but the Herdazian had stumbled onto the lift with a chair so grand, inlaid with embroidered blue cloth and silver, it was almost a throne. They settled their chairs behind hers with a fair bit of squabbling, and then attacked the food without waiting for permission. For a group that was essentially one step from being light-eyed shard-bearers, they were an unruly and raucous bunch. Bridge 4 had, characteristically, taken the news of their leader's potential fall with laughter. "Kaladin is tougher than a wind-tossed boulder, Brightness," Teft had told her. "He survived Bridge 4, he survived the chasms, and he'll survive this." She had to admit their optimism was heartening. But if the team had survived, why hadn't they returned during the latest high storm? "Steady," Navani thought to herself, regarding the bridgemen, who were surrounded by laughter spren. One of those men currently carried Jezereza's honor blade. She couldn't tell which. The blade could be dismissed like an ordinary shard blade, and they swapped it among themselves in order to be unpredictable. Soon the others began arriving on different lifts, and Navani watched carefully. The chair-carrying tradition was, in part, a symbol of equality, but Navani figured she might be able to learn something about the monarchs from their choices. Being a human was about making sense of chaos, finding meaning among the random elements of the world. First to arrive was the young Azish Prime. His tailor had done a wonderful job making his regal costume fit. It would have been easy for the youth to look like a child swimming in those stately robes and that headdress. He carried a very ornate throne covered in loud Azish patterns, and each of his closest advisors helped by holding it with one hand. The large contingent settled in, and others flooded in behind, including three representatives of kingdoms subject to Aesir: the Prime of Emul, the Princess of Yazir, and the ambassador from Tashik. All brought chairs that were faintly inferior to that of the Aesish Prime. A balancing act went on here. Each of the three monarchies gave just enough respect to the Prime so as not to embarrass him. They were his subjects in name only. Still, Navani should be able to focus her diplomacy efforts on the Prime. Tashik, Emul, and Yazir would fall in line. Two were historically closest with the Aesish throne, and the third, Emul, was in no position to stand on its own after the war with Tukar and the Voidbringer assault had basically broken the princedom into pieces. The Alethi contingent arrived next. Renarin, who seemed terrified that something had happened to his brother, brought a simple chair. Yasna had outdone him by actually bringing a padded stool. She and Dalinar could be painfully similar. Navani noticed with annoyance that Sabariel and Pallona weren't with the other High Princes. Well, at least they hadn't shown up bearing massage tables. Notably, Iale Sadius ignored the requirement that she carry her own chair. A scarred guardsman placed a sleek, lacquered chair down for her, stained so dark a maroon it might as well have been black. She met Navani's eyes as she sat, cold and confident. Amaram was technically High Prince, but he was still in Thelena, working alongside his soldiers to rebuild the city. Navani doubted Iale would have let him represent them at this meeting anyway. It seemed so long ago when Iale and Navani had huddled together at dinners, conspiring on how to stabilize the kingdom their husbands were conquering. Now Navani wanted to seize the woman and shake her. "Can't you stop being petty for one storming minute?" Well, as had been happening for so long now, the other High Princes would defer either to Colin or to Sadius. Letting Iale participate was a calculated risk. Forbid her, and the woman would find a way to sabotage the proceedings. Let her in, and hopefully she'd start to see the importance of this work. At least Queen Fen and her consort seemed committed to the coalition. They set their chairs by the glass window, backs to the storms, as the Thalans often joked. Their wooden chairs were high-backed, painted blue, and upholstered a pale nautical white. Tara Vangian, bearing a nondescript chair of wood with no padding, asked to join them. The old man had insisted on carrying his own chair, though Navani had specifically excused him, Ashno of Sages, and others with a frail bearing. Adratagia sat with him, as did his surge binder. She didn't go join Bridge 4, and, curiously, Navani realized she still thought of the woman as his surge binder. The only other person of note was Aunak, the Natan ambassador. He represented a dead kingdom that had been reduced to a single city-state on the eastern coast of Roshar, with a few other cities as protectorates. For a moment it all seemed too much for Navani. The Aesish Empire with all its intricacies, the counter-movement among the Alethi High Princes, Taravangian, who was somehow king of Yakaved, the second-largest kingdom on Roshar, Queen Fen and her obligation to the guilds in her city. The Radiance, like the little Reshi who was currently out-eating the huge Horn-Eater Bridgeman, almost as if it were a contest. So much to think about. Now was when Dalinar stepped back? Calm, Navani thought at herself, taking a deep breath. Order from chaos. Find the structure here and start building upon it. Everyone had naturally arranged themselves into a circle, with monarchs at the front and high princes, viziers, interpreters, and scribes radiating out from them. Navani stood up and strode into the center. Just as everyone was quieting, Sabariel and his mistress finally sauntered in. They made right for the food, and had apparently forgotten chairs entirely. "Aye," she said as the room hushed again. "Know of no other conference like this in the history of Roshar. Perhaps they were common in the days of the Knights Radiant, but certainly nothing like it has occurred since the Recreants. I would like to both welcome and thank you, our noble guests. Today, we make history."
"It only took a desolation to cause it," Sabariel said from the food table. "The world should end more often. It makes everyone so much more accommodating."
The various interpreters whispered translations to their charges. Navani found herself wondering if it was too late to have him tossed off the tower. You could do it. The sheer side of Urethiru facing the origin was straight, all the way down. She would watch Sabariel fall practically to the bottom of the mountains if she wanted.
"We," Navani said sharply, "are here to discuss the future of Roshar. We must have a unified vision and goal."
She glanced around the room as people considered. "He's going to talk first," she thought, noticing the prime of Emul shifting in his seat. His name was Vexil the Wise, but people often referred to the Makabaki princes and primes by their country, much as Alethihai princes were often referred to by their house name.
"The course is obvious, isn't it?" Emul said through an interpreter,
though Navani understood his Azish. He bowed in his seat to the Azish child emperor, then continued,
"We must reclaim my nation from the hands of the traitor Parshman. Then we must conquer Tukar. It is completely unreasonable to allow this insane man who claims to be a god to continue bereaving the glorious Azish Empire."
"This is going to get difficult," Navani thought, as a half dozen other people started to speak at once.
She raised her free hand.
"I will do my best to moderate fairly, Your Majesties, but do realize that I am only one person. I depend upon you all to facilitate the discussion rather than trying to talk over one another."
She nodded at the Azish Prime, hoping he'd take the floor. A translator whispered her words into the Prime's left ear. Then Nura the Vizier leaned forward and spoke quietly into the other, undoubtedly giving instructions.
"They'll want to see how this plays out," Navani decided.
"One of the others will speak next. They'll want to contrast the Emuli position to assert themselves."
"The throne recognizes the Prime of Emul," the little emperor finally said. "And we are aware of his desires."
He paused and looked around.
Anyone else have a comment?"
"My brother the prince wishes to address you," said the tall, refined representative from Tashik, who wore a flowery suit of yellow and gold rather than his people's traditional wrap.
A scribe whispered to him as a span reed scratched out the message Tashik's prince wanted conveyed to the gathering.
"He'll contradict Emul," Navani thought. "Point us in another direction, toward Eerie, maybe?"
"We of Tashik," the ambassador said, "are more interested in the discovery of these glorious portals. The Alethi have invited us here and told us we're part of a grand coalition. We would respectfully inquire how often we will have use of these gates and how to negotiate tariffs."
Immediately, the room exploded with conversation.
"Our gate," Aounak said, "in our historical homeland is being used without our permission. And while we thank the Alethi for securing it for us..."
"If there is to be war," Fenn said, "then it's a bad time to be discussing tariffs. We should just agree to free trade."
"Which would help your merchants, Fenn?" Sabariel called. "How about asking them to help the rest of us out with some free wartime supplies?"
"Emul," the Emuli Prime began.
"Wait," the Yazir princess said. "Shouldn't we be concerned about Eri and Rira, who seem to have completely fallen in with the enemy?"
"Please," Navani said, interrupting the mess of conversations.
"Please."
Let's do this in an orderly way. Perhaps before deciding where to fight, we could discuss how to best equip ourselves against the enemy threat. She looked to Taravangian. Your Majesty, can you tell us more about the shields your scholars in Yakavet are creating?
Yes, they are strong.
How strong? Navani prompted.
Very strong. Yes, strong enough.
He scratched his head and looked at her helplessly.
How strong do you need them to be?
She drew in a deep breath. He wasn't having a good day. Her mother had been like that, lucid on some days, barely cognizant on others. The half shards, Navani said, addressing the room, will give us an edge against the enemy. We have given the plans to the Azish scholars. I'm looking forward to pooling our resources and studying the process.
Could it lead to shard plate? Queen Fen asked.
Possibly, Navani said. But the more I study what we've discovered here in Urethiru, the more I've come to realize that our image of the ancients having fantastic technology was deeply flawed. An exaggeration at best. Perhaps a fancy.
But shards, Fen said.
Manifestations of Spren, Yasna explained. Not fabrial technology. Even the gemstones we discovered, containing words of ancient radiance during the days when they left Urethiru, were crude, if used in a way we hadn't yet explored. All this time we've been assuming that we lost great technology in the desolations, but it seems we are far, far more advanced than the ancients ever were. It is the process of bonding Spren that we lost.
Not lost, the Azish Prime said. Abandoned.
He looked toward Dalinar, who sat in a relaxed posture. Not slumped, but not stiff either. A posture that somehow read as, I'm in control here. Don't pretend otherwise. Dalinar loomed over a room even when trying to be unobtrusive. That furrowed brow darkened his blue eyes, and the way he rubbed his chin evoked the image of a man contemplating whom to execute first. The attendees had arranged their seats roughly in a circle, but most of them faced Dalinar, who sat by Navani's chair. After everything that had happened, they didn't trust him.
The ancient oaths are spoken once more, Dalinar said. We are again radiant. This time we will not abandon you. I vow it.
Nura the Vizier whispered in the Azish Prime's ear, and he nodded before speaking.
We are still very concerned about the powers in which you dabble. These abilities. Who is to say that the Lost Radiants were wrong in abandoning them? They were frightened of something, and they locked these portals for a reason.
It is too late to turn back from this now, Your Majesty, Dalinar said. I have bonded the Storm Father himself. We must either use these abilities or crumple beneath the invasion.
The Prime sat back, and his attendants seemed concerned. They whispered among themselves.
Bring order from the chaos, Navani thought.
She gestured toward the bridgeman and lift. I understand your concern, but surely you have read our report of the oaths these radiants follow. Protection, remembering the fallen. Those oaths are proof that our cause is just, our radiance trustworthy. The powers are in safe hands, Your Majesty.
I think, ELA declared, we should stop dancing around and patting ourselves on the back.
Navani spun to face ELA.
Don't sabotage this, she thought, meeting the woman's eyes. Don't you dare.
We are here, ELA continued, to focus our attention. We should be discussing where to invade to gain the best position for an extended war. Obviously, there is only one answer. Shinovar is a bounteous land, Their orchards grow without end. The land is so mild that even the grass has grown relaxed and fat. We should seize that land to supply our armies."
The others in the room nodded as if this were a perfectly acceptable line of conversation. With one targeted arrow, ELA Sadius proved what everyone whispered, that the Alethi were building a coalition to conquer the world, not just protect it.
"The Shin Mountains present a historical problem," said the Tashiki ambassador. "Attacking across or through them is basically impossible."
"We have the Oath Gates now," Fenn said. "Not to bring up that particular problem again, but has anyone investigated whether the Shin one can be opened? Having Shinovar as a redoubt, difficult to invade conventionally, would help secure our position."
Navani cursed ELA softly. This would only reinforce the Azish worry that the gates were dangerous. She tried to rein the discussion in, but it slipped away from her again.
"We need to know what the Oath Gates do," Tashik was saying. "Could the Alethi not share with us everything they've discovered regarding them?"
"What about your people?" Aladar shot back. "They are the great traders in information. Could you share with us your secrets?"
"All Tashiki information is freely available, at a huge price. We need..." "But Imul..."
"This whole thing is going to be a mess," Fenn said. "I can see it already. We need to be able to trade freely, and Alethi greed could destroy this."
"Alethi greed?" ELA demanded. "Are you trying to see how far you can push us? Because I assure you, Dalinar Kolin will not be intimidated by a bunch of merchants and bankers."
"Please," Navani said into the growing uproar.
"Quiet."
Nobody seemed to notice. Navani breathed out, then cleared her mind. Order from chaos. How could she bring order to this chaos? She stopped fretting and tried to listen to them. She studied the chairs they'd brought, the tone of their voices, their fears, hidden behind what they demanded or requested. The shape of it started to make sense to her. Right now, this room was full of building materials, pieces of Ephabriel. Each monarch, each kingdom was one piece. Dalinar had gathered them, but he hadn't formed them. Navani stepped up to the Azish Prime. People quieted as, shockingly, she bowed to him.
"Your Excellency," she said upon rising, "what would you say is the Azish people's greatest strength?"
He glanced at his advisors as her words were translated, but they gave him no answer. Rather, they seemed curious to know what he'd say.
"Our laws," he finally replied.
"Your famed bureaucracy," Navani said.
"Your clerks and scribes, and by extension the great information centers of Tashik, the timekeepers and storm wardens of Yazir, the Azish legions. You are the greatest organizers on Roshar. I've long envied your orderly approach to the world."
"Perhaps this is why your essay was so well received, Brightness Kolin," the Emperor said, sounding completely sincere.
"In light of your skill, I wonder,
would anyone in this room complain if a specific task were assigned to your scribes? We need procedures, a code of how our kingdoms are to interact, and how we're to share resources. Would you of Azir be willing to create this?" The viziers looked shocked, then immediately began talking to one another in hushed, excited tones. The looks of delight on their faces were enough proof that, yes, indeed, they'd be willing.
"No, wait," Fenn interjected. "Are you talking of laws that we all have to follow?"
Aunak nodded eagerly in agreement.
"More and less than laws," Navani said. "We need codes to guide our interactions, as proven by today. We must have procedures on how we hold meetings, how to give each person a turn, how we share information."
"I don't know if Thalina can agree to even that."
Well, surely you'd want to see what the codes contained first, Queen Fen, Navani said, strolling toward her. After all, we are going to need to administrate trade through the Oath Gates. I wonder, who has excellent expertise in shipping, caravans, and trade in general?
You'd give that to us?
Fen asked, completely taken aback. It seems logical. Sabariel choked softly on the snacks he'd been eating, and Polona pounded him on the back. He'd wanted that job. That will teach you to show up late to my meeting and make only wisecracks, Navani noted. She glanced at Dalinar, who seemed worried. Well, he always seemed worried lately.
I'm not giving you the Oath Gates, Navani said to Fen. But someone has to oversee trade and supplies. It would be a natural match for the Thalen merchants, so long as a fair agreement can be reached.
Huh, Fen said, settling back. She glanced at her consort, who shrugged.
And the Alethi? The petite Yezir princess asked. What of you?
Well, we do excel at one thing, Navani said. She looked to Emul. Would you accept help from our generals and armies to help you secure what is left of your kingdom?
By every Kadasix that has ever been holy, Emul said. Yes, of course. Please. I have several scribes who are experts in fortification,
Aladar suggested from his seat behind Dalinar and Yasna.
They could survey your remaining territory and give you advice on securing it. And recovering what we've lost?
Emul asked. Iale opened her mouth to speak, perhaps to extol the virtues of Alethi warmongering again. Yasna cut her off, speaking decisively.
I propose we entrench ourselves first. Tukar, Iri, Shinovar. Each of these looks tempting to attack, but what good will that do if we stretch ourselves too far? We should focus on securing our lands as they now stand.
Yes, Dalinar said. We shouldn't be asking ourselves where should we strike, but instead, where will our enemies strike next? They've secured three positions, High Prince Aladar said. Eri, Marat, and Alethkar.
But you sent an expedition, Fen said. To reclaim Alethkar.
Navani caught her breath, glancing at Dalinar. He nodded slowly.
Alethkar has fallen, Navani said. The expedition failed. Our homeland is overrun.
Navani had expected this to prompt another burst of conversation, but instead it was greeted only by stunned silence. Yasna continued for her.
The last of our armies have retreated into Herdaz or Yakaved, harried and confused by enemies who can fly, or by the sudden attacks of shock troops of Parshmen. Our only holdouts are on the southern border by the sea. Kolinar has fallen completely. The Oath Gate is lost to us. We've locked it on our side so that it cannot be used to reach Yurithiru.
I'm sorry, Fen said.
My daughter is correct, Navani said, trying to project strength, while admitting that they had become a nation of refugees. We should apply our efforts first toward making sure no more nations fall.
My homeland, the Prime of Emul began. No, Nura said in thickly accented Alethi. I'm sorry, but no. If the Voidbringers had wanted your last nibble of land, Vexil, they'd have taken it. The Alethi can help you secure what you have, and it seems generous of them to do so. The enemy brushed past you to gather in Marat, conquering only what was necessary on the way. Their eyes are turned elsewhere.
Oh, my, Taravangian said. Could they be coming for me?
It does seem a reasonable assumption, Aunak said. The Vaden civil war left the country in ruin,
and the border between Alethkar and Yakavet is porous.
Maybe, Dalinar said. I fought on that border. It's not as easy a battlefield as it would seem.
We must defend Yakavet, Taravangian said. When the king gave me the throne, I promised I'd care for his people. If the Voidbringers attack us...
The worry in his voice gave Navani an opportunity. She stepped back into the center of the room.
We won't allow that to happen, will we?
I will send troops to your aid, Taravangian, Dalinar said. But one army can be construed as an invading force. And I am not intending to invade my allies, even in appearance. Can we not mortar this alliance with a show of solidarity? Will anyone else help?
The Azish Prime regarded Dalinar. Behind him, the viziers and scions conducted a private conversation by writing on pads of paper. When they finished, Vizier Nura leaned forward and whispered to the Emperor, who nodded.
We will send 5 battalions to Yakavet, he said. This will prove an important test of mobility through the Oath Gates. King Taravangian, you will have the support of Azir.
Navani released a long breath in relief. She gave leave for the meeting to take a pause, so that people could enjoy refreshment, though most would probably spend it strategizing or relaying events to their various allies. The High Princes became a flurry of motion, breaking into individual houses to converse. Navani settled down in her seat beside Dalinar.
You've promised away a great deal, he noted. Giving Fen control of trade and supply?
Administration is different from control, Navani said. But either way... Did you think you were going to make this coalition work without giving something up?
No. Of course not.
He stared outward. That haunted expression made her shiver.
What did you remember, Dalinar? And what did the Night Watcher do to you? They needed the Blackthorn. She needed the Blackthorn. His strength to quiet the sick worry inside of her. His will to forge this coalition.
She took his hand in hers, but he stiffened, then stood up. He did that whenever he felt he was growing too relaxed. It was as if he was looking for danger to face. She stood up beside him.
We need to get you out of the tower, she decided. To get a new perspective, visit someplace new.
That, Dalinar said, voice hoarse, would be good.
Taravangian was speaking of having you tour Vaidenar personally. If we're going to send Kolin troops into the kingdom, it would make sense for you to get a feel for the situation there.
Very well.
The Azish called for her, asking for clarification on what direction she wanted them to take with their coalition bylaws. She left Dalinar, but couldn't leave off worrying about him. She'd have to burn a glyph word today. A dozen of them, for Elokar and the others. Except, part of the problem was that Dalinar claimed nobody was watching the prayers as they burned, sending twisting smoke to the Tranquiline halls. Did she believe that? Truly? Today she'd taken a huge step toward unifying Roshar, yet she felt more powerless than ever.